Chapter 21, Virginia. It was a 4-hour bus ride to Washington, D.C. I had looked forward to reading my new books and enjoying the view, but I was hungover badly from the one-night reunion with Christian and Daniel. Whenever I tried to read or look too much out of the window, I got nauseous and had to stop. Elise, a reader of my blog who had offered me a couch for the night, was waiting for me in a Starbucks by the bus stop. She had brought sandwiches for me so I could get some food before training. I felt horrible, so it was nice to have a fellow jiu-jitsu friend take a little care of me. I mostly felt like eating and sleeping, but since I was staying only one day in town, I did not want to miss my chance of training with Ryan Hall and his guys. I had to go straight to the gym to make it in time for the class. The underground stations were enormous concrete structures and must have looked really futuristic in the 80s. Once again, I found myself in an Arnold Schwarzenegger movie from my childhood. The class had already started when I got to the gym. It was upstairs in a small, isolated commercial building surrounded by a parking lot. Music was playing at a low volume and Ryan was teaching the class as I entered the room. He stopped for a second to raise his hand and welcome me as he saw me arrive. I had met Ryan several years back at one of my trips to New York, where he had started training in Ronin Athletics with Christian Montes before he moved to DC. He was on a visit to New York at the same time as me and popped by to have a role in his old gym. I hadn't been following much of the BJJ competition scene at the time, so I didn't know anything about him other than his name. After tapping me out with spinning triangles from upside down guard a million times in 5 minutes, I figured I'd better try and learn what he was doing. He was, like myself, still a purple belt at the time, but he manhandled me worse than most black belts I'd rolled with up until then. I had planned to go visit Marcelo Garcia's gym that evening, and Ryan had the same thing in mind, so we went there together. I met him a few times at tournaments in the following years, but never got the chance to train with him again. Now, I stood in his gym with a horrible hangover and no sleep after a full day of sitting on a bus. I was nowhere near ready for training, but I wouldn't miss it for the world. Ryan's attention to detail was stunning. He was teaching a pretty basic sweep from when the opponent was standing up in the guard. What was interesting was how he spent a huge amount of time analyzing every single situation that could happen in the scramble that followed. I had seen numerous videos of him compete and pull off moves that seemed impossible to figure out. Observing him teach, it was obvious that the flowcharts he had in his head of every technique had to be huge. He went through every possible outcome of the situation, unfolding the role of each limb, reaction, and possibility. He made people understand the consequences of every counter and counter-counter the opponent could do. He asked the students questions all the time. What would happen if the left leg touches the ground? What way would your opponent have to turn to make it impossible for you to take the back? Which hand do you need to control to prevent him from standing up? My brain was overloaded with information, but it was inspiring to see such a deep level of detail and understanding. The guys looked hungry. The world championship was just around the corner and everyone seemed very focused. Ryan asked me if I wanted to go the first round. There was no way I could say no to rolling with him, no matter how shitty I felt, so I told him that it would be my pleasure. Pleasure was maybe not the right word. I still felt horrible and it was not about to get any better in the hands of one of the best in the world. As we clapped hands, his eyes changed. I saw an immense focus as I looked into them. There was no connection with the outside world, like he put on a mask and went on autopilot. My legs were tired, but even if they were fresh, he would still have passed my guard like he did in only a few seconds. He put his knee on my chest and I couldn't move. It felt like my lungs were collapsing and my head exploding. Seconds before I was about to give up, he switched to side control. His crossface was one of the strongest I'd ever felt. His bicep crushed my face so hard that my ear channel closed up and I felt like I was underwater. I think I remembered he was a lightweight, but he seemed more like a super heavyweight on top of me. I had lost a lot of strength on the trip and my muscles felt like jelly. The pressure was insane. I was nowhere near getting out of his control. I felt like a child in his hands. There was nothing I could do. He mounted me, and the pressure from the position alone made it difficult to breathe. I tried to find little pockets of air to suck in, but eventually I had to tap out. And he wasn't even trying to submit me yet. I looked at the timer. There were still 2 minutes to go. All I wanted in life at that point was to say stop, but it was my own fault that I felt so bad. I could have chosen not to drink the night before. I could have gone to bed earlier. I could have taken my time to get to Arlington and relaxed there for a few days instead of going straight from the bus to the gym. Here I was, rolling with one of the toughest players in the world for one night only, and I was about to say no thank you? It was not happening. I had to keep going. There was no ego. He wasn't trying to prove anything. I sucked and I came to train during the last preparations for the biggest competition in the world. Second time around was exactly like the first. It was pure survival from my side. All my focus went on breathing and not throwing up. I gave up the bag and Ryan punched his forearm across my face. I tapped out and the timer beeped. He thanked me for the roll as his eyes and smile went back to normal. I sat on the mat with my head between my legs. I had a taste of blood in my mouth, a headache, and a big bruise on the top of my head. I had basically just gotten completely beaten up. Despite everything my body screaming for me to stop, I took a few more rounds of rolling. It was a tough crowd in the gym with lots of seriously good guys. Gianni, a young strong purple belt, toyed with me for 10 minutes. I could only hang on, defend and try to survive. I had no offense left in me, no timing, no strength. I felt like a white belt in the hands of the hungry competitive guys who were all in killer shape. I was paying for the way I had tortured my body with alcohol. It was relentlessly punishing me for not being disciplined. Class was over and people were sitting around on the mats. I couldn't say anything. I wished I could have gone back in time and done things right. I only had one chance to train in this gym and I blew it. I rested my aching head in my hands, holding it up by grabbing my long messy hair. Ryan was still going at it. He was manhandling a bigger purple belt and not even using his hands. His legs moved like they were a set of arms. It was amazing to watch. When he was done, I politely asked if he wanted me to pay a mat fee for the class. "Are you kidding me?" he said, looking almost offended that I assumed he would charge me. Then he asked if I wanted to meet up the next day around noon and do some more training. I was surprised that he wanted to train more with me after the non-existent amount of resistance I'd given him half an hour earlier. I wouldn't have minded a second chance, but I was leaving with the bus the next morning already. Once again, I had to turn down a private training session with one of my idols of the sport. My bad day just got worse. As I walked out of the gym, bruised, in pain, and on the verge of throwing up, I promised myself to never treat my body like that again the day before training. It was horrible. My year and a half old, worn out brown belt was wrapped around my gi. I carried it over my shoulders as I stood by the bus stop, waiting for Elise to pick me up. Despite knowing that I would have done better if I was rested, my confidence had taken a big hit. I felt like I had let myself down. I had lost focus and not taken my job seriously. I still had a long, long way before reaching black belt level. "Where are you going, son?" the bus driver asked me as I stood there at the station, looking confused with my ticket in the hand. He was excited to hear that I was looking for his bus to Richmond. Another traveler asked for the bus to New York. "New York, that's down there, folks. I jumped on the old Greyhound and found a place to sit. I wondered how many times that seat had traveled across the country. It had holes in it, and the curtains in my window must have been hanging there for at least a decade or two. The old speaker crackled as the driver turned on the microphone and kindly informed us all that we were now about to hit the road. Destination, Richmond, Virginia. Robert called. He would be at the bus station to pick me up 20 minutes later. As I sat there and waited, I thought about our trip together in Eastern Europe. It felt almost unreal, like it didn't happen. It was such a different place from where I was at now, and it was hard to recall the feeling of driving small Soviet buses in the snowy dark Romanian landscape as anything other than a dream. I thought about how the kids in the village were doing and wondered if I'd ever be able to come back to them again. As I walked out of the station, the sun was shining and loud music was playing from a stadium across the road. It was great to see Robert and Amanda again, and they both gave me a big hug. The drive to the campsite took a few hours. It seemed like it was just an endless landscape of fields and forests. Every 10 minutes or so, we would pass by a small house. I was pleased that, once again, I had succeeded in finding my way out of the big city to look for adventure. A few days of camping was going to be a nice break from training, and definitely something different to cross off the list. The family had camped by a river in the forest. I shook hands with everyone, and they welcomed me to the Redneck Riviera, as they called it. A few oversized trucks and two enormous campers were parked across from each other on the small patch of grass. One of them displayed an eagle, an American flag, and the text Big Country on it. A few tents were already raised, the bonfire was going on, and country music came out of the speakers from one of the campers. I was excited to spend a few days in the open air. I pulled my backpack out of the car and put on a hoodie. It was already getting dark and a bit colder. I gave Robert the envelope with the money from the fundraiser seminar in New York. It would be interesting to see what the kids in the little village would get out of it. Everyone in the family was really nice to me, and I felt at home at the little campsite. It was an area big enough to hold some tables and a trailer, and had a roof over it so that when it started drizzling a little bit, we all got under it to stay dry. Cookers were filled with seafood, and everyone was anxious for the dinner to be ready, myself included. Someone shouted with a singing southern accent for us to be careful, and poured the steaming hot seafood from the cookers into big tin containers. The table fitted all of us, and we sat around it eating crabs, potatoes, sausages, and mussels with our fingers for what seemed like hours. It looked like there was an unlimited amount of food, and I stuffed myself to the point where I had almost had too much. Robert battled his brother long after the rest of us gave up. The piles of crab shells looked like little volcanoes and filled both their plates to the limit. When I was done eating, I walked to the bushes by the river to take a leak. It was dark, and the air was damp and fresh from the rain that had just passed. The quiet country music played from the camper on the other side of the campsite, and the relit bonfire crackled softly. It was hard not to smile at my own luck, being able to experience something like that on my trip. We sat in little chairs around the bonfire and talked while making s'mores and marshmallows. 2 days earlier, I had been walking around the stressful streets of Manhattan. Looking into the fire was calming and reminding me of my childhood. We had a campfireplace in the backyard of our house, and during summer, my brother, our friends, and I made bonfires there every time we had the opportunity. In my teens, when we were still too young to go to bars, we often had parties by the campfire in the forest, which our small town bordered. More than a few times, the flames got a little too high, and I'm still surprised that we never burned down that forest on the dry summer nights. A few beers went down, and we spent the rest of the evening playing a game with dice and quarters. I didn't have any American change to play with, but my bag was full of coins from around the world that I could throw in the game. A big one from the Philippines became sought after by the players. Anytime someone hit a 6 with the die, they immediately looked to grab the Fallopian Quarter, as it was quickly named. I shared a tent with Robert and Amanda that we raised in the middle of the night when we were done playing with Fallopian and Taiwanesian money. We didn't have any mattresses, but my super light sleeping bag did just fine, even though I was lying directly on the ground in it. There were crabs and country music for breakfast. The sun had come out and I was enjoying it, sitting in a chair trying to wake up. The crabs tasted as good as the night before and the eating contest had picked up again. I was sad to leave life on the Redneck Riviera, but my itinerary was set and I was heading south.